Can you tell us a little bit about how you used media in talking about detention and immigration?
Well, I've been really involved with projects like Melbourne Indie Media, but also a collective called Space Kids, which run kind of an open access media centre in a warehouse in Melbourne, and also with Scar TV, who are a sort of video collective which produce a weekly alternative news program called Access News. And through those projects and other ones that we look at, you know, I've looked at a range of issues and worked with different mediums across a range of issues, but more specifically with regards to migration and freedom of movement around the Woomera 2002 protests at Easter last year at the detention centre in the Australian desert. We organised a project called Desert Indie Media. So we had a number of laptops in the back of a truck trying to shield it from the red dust which seems to get into everything in the desert. And because we weren't able to set up a net connection at the camp, we were then every day, twice a day, taking all of the reports and images that people put on these laptops during the day to a secure location where we did have a net connection, and uploading them to Indie Media and the Woomera website and so on. It was part of a 5-day camp which has a fairly long title. It was called the Auto Nomadic Festival of Freedoms, Auto Nomadic Caravan, and it was in effect a border camp, and the border that we were outside was the border of the Woomera Detention Centre. And it was a 5-day convergence and festival that was extremely organic, and it was organised in a very decentralised manner, and it was really, really quite an incredible experience.
Wow. When was that exactly?
It was from the 28th of March to about the 2nd of April last year, and I'm sure that most people have seen images or heard something about it, because a really incredible thing happened where a large number of people actually escaped from the Woomera Detention Centre as part of the actions around this festival and all this convergence, and it was extremely, extremely intense and incredible event.
I've seen some of that footage in the film Holiday Camp, and I have to say it was quite mind-blowing. Quite amazing, incredibly moving. I can't imagine what it must have been like to experience that.
It's very, very hard to ever convey what it was like, and I think in some ways that's why having the film like Holiday Camp is so powerful. But it's really great. It's funny, it wasn't great at the time, but my camera stopped working about 3 minutes before the first fence came down. It got full of dust. So I just had to put it back in my backpack and live the experience. And although I appreciate having these films now, I actually really appreciate the fact that I lived that experience, you know, not as a media activist trying to get the best angle with a camera, but actually, you know, physically stood at the fences, talking to people through those fences. And we were there for a good 20 minutes before the actual escape happened, and in that time it was very, very, you know, it was extremely kind of crystallising moment to have talked a lot about borders and talked about freedom of movement and thought about these issues, but then to actually stand at a fence separated from another person by a huge coil of razor wire for no reason at all, it's hard to get a much more kind of symbolic, immediate sort of situation than that. And then after that, I mean, that was horrific, that experience. It was so emotional and so disturbing. And then when the fence opened and all of a sudden people were jumping through, it was, I mean, such an incredible moment. It is really difficult to convey.
So how did this come about? In the video, you're talking about, you know, people, it took a lot of planning, and I guess it was a really long way for people to travel to get there,
yeah.
And they did so, it seems, with quite a clear political analysis.
Yeah.
And making some very important connections.
But, well, one of the really sort of key things about people who were involved in organising and initiating the convergence was that it not be a single issue thing, that it wasn't like all these people who'd been protesting a uranium mine or a forest being logged or against the corporations that came to the World Economic Forum. We had a huge convergence around that. It wasn't that we were going to drop globalisation as an issue, or that we were going to drop uranium as an issue, or that we weren't going to be in solidarity with Indigenous people. It was very clearly, okay, this is an issue that we want to mobilise around, but we want to make the connections between this issue and other issues. And the site at Woomera is incredibly important because it's actually federal land. There's a huge area of the state of South Australia called the Woomera Prohibited Zone, which was set up for British atomic tests in the 1950s. The Indigenous people were pushed off the land for these tests to happen. Indigenous people were dispossessed, pushed off their land for these nuclear tests in the 50s. Then the area was set up as a military testing zone, and an American spy base was installed there. Then, in the early 90s, you get a detention centre established in this space. So in this one area, you have uranium being dug up, you have rockets being tested, and then you have Indigenous people pushed off their land. And then you have people fleeing war-torn countries as a cause of this uranium, of the bombs that are being tested there, coming back and being put into this detention centre. So it's an incredible site of convergence of issues where it was possible to make those connections. Basically, the issue of going to Woomera, the key thing was make the connections and make the journey. So we were really, you know, people were being really encouraged to think about all of these different things that converge in this one sort of physical space. So it was, yeah, it was quite amazing. And people travelled, some people travelled for 3 days to get there. I mean, it's a long way from the major cities in Australia.
How many people were there?
It's about 1,500, which is pretty incredible convergence. And I mean, right up until the last moment, nobody had any idea how many people were going to arrive. And when it was that big, it was really, you know, it was quite incredible, this camp in the middle of the desert. I mean, it was beautiful. It was really amazing.
Would you say that the authorities were possibly not prepared either for those numbers?
I think they had quite a fair idea that a large number of people were going to come. But again, because this is federal land, and because the detention centre is run by a private company, you had three different levels of kind of security authority, if you like. You had the federal police, the state police, and then you had the ACM, which is Australasian Correctional Management staff. And as we understand, there were some quite large sort of political sort of spats between the state police and the federal police over who had authority in that space. There was also the envoy of the Ministry of Defence, who's responsible for the township of Woomera. So you had all this kind of another level of sort of political stuff going on. So
you took advantage of that a little bit.
Definitely.
That's wonderful. Just going back to the actual breakout, how did it come about? I mean, these fences came down, and it seemed to me, watching Holiday Camp, that there suddenly were no cops in sight, where at one point I believe there were water cannons stationed close by. You know, you seem to have had a window of opportunity. And I guess your numbers were an important factor in that too, but can you...
Yeah, numbers, distance from... I mean, it was the Easter weekend, and so the state police had to pull police from across the state, you know, bring them 8 hours north to stay in this space for 5 days. So a lot of the state police were pretty unhappy. They were getting their Easter weekend to come up and look over this protest, but they didn't have the authority because the federal police were there. And as we understand it, the state police, a lot of the police were in the pub, in the hotel, about 5 kilometres away in the town of Woomera. Because where we were camped and where the detention centre is about 5 kilometres outside this town. So we had a phone contact inside the detention centre, and at midday we'd coordinated a sound action from a kilometre apart where we'd flown kites and drummed and they'd made noise and we kind of communicated across the fences and the distance through sound, and that was really incredible. And then at about 5:30 in the evening we had phone contact again with the people inside, and they said, come at 6 o'clock, we're going to do an action. So we announced this and people just immediately started to walk, not up the road to the first fence, but around the first fence, across the plains, across this beautiful bushy red earth, beautiful blue sky, towards the first fence. And we could see detainees with banners on the roof, and we were getting closer and closer. And
so the activism was definitely coming from inside as well.
It was completely. I mean, the people inside Woomera have been resisting since, you know, they got detained. But the reason that a movement started outside was because so much was happening inside that people became aware and wanted to act in solidarity. So it was absolutely not in any way like some kind of we went and freed them. It was like a very mutual kind of very, you know, it was an action of solidarity across the fences. That's what it was. When we arrived at the first fence, which you see coming down, it just came down. It was just spontaneous. People ran across the fence, and then we arrived at the second fence, as I said, where we were for about 20 minutes. And we were all looking around and where are the police? Where are the police? And I've shown this video around to lots of people in Europe, and they'll say, oh gosh, Australian police are really, you know, they're really soft and blah blah. But this was like this incredible window, and no one knows how it happened. It was so spontaneous that, I mean, obviously people had planned to do direct action, had planned civil disobedience, had talked about crossing the fences, but, you know, you can never plan such an incredible sort of window. And then the detainees themselves had a bar which they managed to wedge between two of the poles in the outer fence and make a hole, and then people just started to spill through the fence. And I had no idea how many people escaped, and it wasn't until afterwards that I found out it was 53, and I just couldn't believe that that many people escaped. And I mean, that night, that evening is just so difficult to, again, convey.
Because people, just so that we understand, people are escaping to your camp, first of all, right? That's where they're taking refuge, inside.
They had to get from that camp back to our campsite, which was a kilometre, and there was police between our camp and the detention centre.
And this is desert, so there's not
this
a lot
of... This is desert, and there's no... I mean, like, there's scrub and ground coverage, but there's no trees, and there was no buildings or anything. So we had to disguise people very quickly, give people hats, jumpers, anything we could to cover up their clothes. It was, you know, and in this time, some people of a guy of Bangladeshi origin, a couple of people, Aboriginal activists, people who were dark-skinned were really targeted by police. This Bangladeshi guy was actually... guy of Bangladeshi descent was actually arrested because they thought he was an escaped detainee. So police were sort of snatching anybody who looked Arabic or dark or, you know, not Anglo-Saxon, basically. So, I mean, it was just this kind of case of like, okay, we've broken all these fences, but now they've moved the fence further out, they've got roadblocks, they're going through the camp, you know. So it wasn't just, okay, the fences is down, now it's done, you know, then...
Mm-hmm.
Basically, of the 53 people that escaped, 39 were recaptured.
On that day?
On that, in the next week. But 14 are still free from that escape.
So a bunch of people actually got out of that area?
Which is unbelievable, because basically that area is 8 hours north of Adelaide, which is the capital of South Australia. There's one or two petrol stations between Woomera and Adelaide, and there's one highway, and there was a roadblock on that highway. So I have no idea how they did it, but it's brilliant, and somehow they did. So a number of people got out in cars, a lot of people got stopped at roadblocks. You know, it was quite horrible and really gut-wrenching to to watch the news over the next week. Two more detainees rearrested and so on. So I think quite a few were recaptured in our campsite that night as well.
But there's still 11.
Yeah, I think it's 12 actually, sorry, that are still free from last year. So
the movement must have developed some type of support infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, basically the kind of approach that a lot of us took to it after the event was, we're not going to speculate on how things happened or where people are. We're just going to say the less we know, the better it is. And for me as well, since I've left Australia, I've never asked anyone on the telephone or by email what's happened, and I would certainly not do that in terms of security.
So, and also, it's ongoing, I understand, that there have been other breakouts since.
Yeah, there's been two large ones since at Woomera. There's also been several escapes from Villawood Detention Centre in Sydney. The most recent one at Woomera was about 3 weeks ago, and unfortunately everybody involved in the escape out, both from inside and outside, were arrested.
So Woomera is still operating, because we saw around Christmas time there were images in the news of riots and fires being set, that sort of thing. And so they're still operating this camp.
I think they're trying to decommission Woomera, and I think a lot of it is to do with the fact that it's become so notorious, internationally known. I think it's very much like a tactic of a company when it greenwashes itself, that it changes its name and it produces a new propaganda. And I think it's, I mean, there's still seven other camps that operate in Australia, and there's offshore camps that are run by the IOM in Nauru and Papua New Guinea. So, and there's a new camp being opened in Baxter, and there's another six planned. So they are going to close Woomera down, but it's basically irrelevant.
The same company, by the way, manages the mini detention center here close to Toronto Airport, which is basically part of a hotel, ironically called the Celebrity Inn.
Gosh.
Yeah, but the U.S. government is also pressuring the Canadian government to build something proper, as they put it. I'm going to ask you about, you know, your work in Europe and taking your video and talking about these things, but just before we go to that, there's something said that really struck me in holiday camp by an Iraqi refugee. Dr. Zoltan, I think, he says that defense is not so much about keeping the refugees inside as it is about keeping the protesters out.
Yeah. I think it's got a lot to do with trying to avoid people outside having a human image and a connection with people inside, because, you know, some really horrific spin has been put on the asylum and refugee issue, especially since September the 11th. The war on terrorism in Australia, they've used really horrific tactics of linking people who are seeking asylum, who are coming from maybe Iraq or Afghanistan, with the war on terrorism, and really kind of trying to incite fear and racism around those issues, and using terrorism as a sort of tool. So if you can keep people outside, if you can keep information low, if you can stop people from connecting with people inside and having human relationships with them, it's easier to kind of incite this fear and division. Yeah, I think that's a very important point about all of this.
There's a really heart-wrenching moment where I think you've just gotten close to the second fence, and there's like that first initial contact, and one of the people says, "I'm human, I'm not an animal."
And that's what everyone was saying. That was the biggest thing they wanted to get across.
Yeah.
I'm human,
yeah.
I'm not an animal. Why am I in here? Why am I in here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why this moment at the fence is so important, because we were able to say, we know. It was this incredible moment on the Sunday when we went back. We went back around the detention centre. And as we arrived, all of the detainees inside, there's about 300 of them, and they were chanting, "We love you, we love you."
Wow.
And we were all going, "No, no, no, we love you." And it was just this, you know, and people were throwing notes and flowers across the set of fences, and people were reaching through and holding hands and really saying, "We love you, we love you." And they were saying, "Thank you for coming." And we were saying, "We're sorry, we can't stay longer." And it was like this really genuine, simple human connection, which is what so much of the media and the politics and the, you know, the spin around this is really trying to... I mean, it's simple. Those people shouldn't be behind those fences. Nobody should be, but, you know, people try and complicate it so much and muddy the waters with all this horrible, horrible racist, you know, slurs and really just fear-mongering and scapegoating. And so these kind of moments were really important.
That's beautiful. So you went to Europe, you took your video and your experiences, and you hooked up with people involved in the border camps in Europe.
Yeah, I basically sent around an email saying I was coming to every sort of indie media group or video group or squat group or border group or refugee group I could find an email address for. And then when people started saying, "Yeah, our squat has a beam, a projector and an info space. Yes, come and do a night at our info cafe. Come to this border camp, come here." I just sort of started to...
Travel
through, like, hitching around and staying in a lot of squats and social centres and just basically anywhere that I could meet people, show the video and talk about Woomera, and mainly in Amsterdam, the UK, France, a little bit in Germany and Spain. So kind of mainly Western Europe, but any time I could, I'd made copies of the videos and distributed them to people who've taken them all over the place.
Were you at any of the European border camps?
I went to Strasbourg, which was billed as being a big international border camp, and was probably about 2,000 people there. The town of Strasbourg is on the border of France and Germany. And it was, I mean, there were some really incredible people there, and there were some fantastic exchanges there, but there was a lot of problems with the camp as well. Every summer in Europe, there has been in the last few years about 5 or 6 border camps, and generally they've been a lot smaller, and I think from what I heard from other people, a lot more effective than Strasbourg was.
What are people trying to achieve with the border camps?
I think a whole range of things. I think basically educating themselves, educating people in the local area, having a sort of a physical protest and convergence. Some of the border camps, like in 2001, there was a border camp at the Frankfurt Airport, which isn't on a border between different states, but is on a distinct border. So it's the site where a lot of people are deported from, and there is a deportation centre, much like the one that you just mentioned in Canada. And I think at some of them they were also like working on actual ways of getting people through borders. Another element of these border camps was sort of building networks between people who were doing research on different issues of with regards to migration, whether they were self-organised refugee groups or whether they were people working on anti-deportation campaigns, people who were researching the involvement of different airline companies in deportation, because there's a lot of agreements between different governments and different airline companies with deportations. Also a lot of hotel companies, like Hotel Ibis in France, are one of the companies that's very closely linked with deportations from France. So basically sharing a lot of information and talking about strategies for actions and so on.
That's really interesting. Do you know when the next or where the next border camp will be?
I know that there's several this summer, but the only one that I've heard about so far is in Romania, which I'm quite interested in going to that one, I think. I'm interested in going to the smaller ones, I think, than Strasbourg, because Strasbourg was so large. And it was supposed to be an action camp, but it was also supposed to be an information camp. And there was a lot of different people with lots of different ideas about what it could or couldn't be. And it kind of never quite realised any of them, so I'm quite interested in checking out smaller, more local campaigns.
What's your next project?
Well, I'm probably going to go and spend some time in Spain, and there's quite a lot of interesting projects there. In the south, there's Ninguna Persona Es Illegal, which No One Is Illegal group, that are doing a lot of work with Moroccan groups around, which is the border between Spain and Morocco across the Gibraltar Strait. It's extremely treacherous, and it's unknown how many people die every year trying to cross, but it's certainly in the hundreds, if not thousands. And it's also basically the border of Europe and the West and Africa and the East, so it's a very important division. I'm quite interested in working around that a bit more. And also in Barcelona, there's a huge squatted military barracks which has been squatted to provide accommodation for sans-papier and illegal people who are based in Barcelona, so quite interested in looking at those kind of issues of reclamation of space and illegality. So yeah, I'm not sure. Learn some more languages and
Will you have your video camera with you?
I will do. I've still got to repair it from all the Woomera dust.
We're running out of time. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. It's been really informative, and I know that people here are going to find this really useful. So I say, I'm going to say Megwetch, which is thank you, and Nishnabi. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the best, and I hope that we keep in touch.
One thing is that, you know, when people hear about stories of things that happen in Australia or Europe or whatever, sometimes it can sound so much more kind of glorified or sexy because it's exotic and remote. But, I mean, as you mentioned, there's this detention centre in Canada and the same issue happening all across North America. And there's definitely loads of amazing local groups working on stuff that I've heard of in that area. And, I mean, local. I encourage everyone to get involved. And I think, you know, talking about campaigns and big actions is also very sexy, but the human thing, like just genuine, you know, day-to-day support is also crucial.
Thank you so much again. I think that last point was so important, and that work really needs to be honored, you know, the non-sexy, non-exciting, where you're not so high-profile. But, I mean, how many actions happen like you mentioned, and then the people are left behind. I mean, those people stay there.
Yeah.
So I think that is really important to underline.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, there's some really interesting projects of, like, community resource centres which, like, provide food and language training and clothes and accommodation, which is, like, it's not like some huge anti-state action, but it's just human and supporting, and it's really important.